Climate is what we expect. Weather is what we get. At least, so said Mark Twain. Though it is easy for we city people to forget, living as we do in air-conditioned cocoons, that weather is the element of climate that allows us to eat, farmers do not forget, because weather is the element that allows them to earn a living. When it comes to observing climate to predict weather, the old farmer's almanac is almost 80% right all the time. And so today we ask the old farmer's almanac, is the globe really warming?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 563rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in the Gold Coast who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
And also, Carol Stafford's on the phones. Hello, Carol. Folks, many of our conversations begin with the observation about the weather. Nice, we're having weather today, isn't it? Yes, sure it is. Today we're going to talk to open the pages of the Old Farmer's Almanac, a publication that has earned its keep for 216 years by predicting next year's weather. And here's the fun part. The Old Farmer's Almanac is traditionally credited with being 80% right. Now, if you're a gambling person, like all farmers are gambling people, you could earn a living by being 80% right, right? So, given all the political posturing about global warming, we thought it smart to ask the Old Farmer's Almanac, is the globe warming? Here today to help us find an answer, we have Janice Stillman, editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Janice, welcome aboard.
Good morning, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Gosh, the 13th editor of a publication that has been on the market for 216 years.
Well, I could have been 14. They told me when they hired me, they said, look, if you have any problems with the number 13, we can bring somebody in for a couple of weeks.
That's pretty good. Well, it's actually an honor to be, you know, ahead of a publication that's been on the market for so long, 216 years. That goes back to the days of George Washington.
You're absolutely right, yes. And it is an honor, and it's a thrill, and, you know, it's a delight. Yes, the Old Farmer's Almanac has been part of the American culture and, you know, for 216 years. It was founded in Western Massachusetts by Robert D. Thomas. His picture, his image is on the cover, with also the image of Ben Franklin, who was not involved in this almanac, but because he founded Poor Richard's Almanac that many people will remember many years before, and indeed Robert B. Thomas was born, we honor Benjamin Franklin on our cover with his image.
Mm-hmm. And a good one to honor as well. Same cover that you've had for many, many years, too. You just don't change the cover, do you, except to put a new year in it.
And the year in the Roman numerals. We've had the yellow cover with the engraving of the four seasons, and as I mentioned, Robert B. Thomas and Ben Franklin on the front since 1852. So we haven't changed. It's changed a little bit in size. The shade of yellow has changed a bit over the course of time, but it is essentially the same book that folks remember for generations.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, back 200 years ago, we were all farmers, and today nobody is a farmer. So who does the Old Farmer's Almanac sell itself to?
Well, I certainly wouldn't say nobody is a farmer. I honestly don't have any statistics in front of me, but we, you know, our food is grown and comes from somewhere. And indeed, one of the movements that we're seeing, and I think you're familiar with to a certain extent, of course, is the metro farmer.
Mm-hmm.
The folks in the cities who are growing a few or in some cases a lot of vegetables in their backyards or in pots. Our readership to about 58% of our readers live on about an acre or less, which indicates they're suburban. Mm-hmm. They love to garden. 11% of our readers have between 1 and 50 acres. We hear from farmers and gardeners around the country all the time, the folks that grow vegetables and various other things, food to eat. So I think, and especially with the organic movement now and the interest in folks wanting to know where their food comes from and getting, if you will, pure foods, farming is enjoying a resurgence. I think it's not the industrial farm necessarily, but I think there are more and more folks interested in growing food, and as I say, whether it's a pot or a plot, a community garden, or several acres on the fringes of the suburbs. I think lots of folks are thinking of themselves as farmers or small farmers or just food growers.
Well, you know, I was thinking that for a publication that's been in business for 216 years, targeting the demographic of farmers, you folks must have a real good eye on that, on the transition from being an urban or a country culture. You know, people who lived out on the land and survived from the land. And how we all moved into the city and got away from the land and ate white bread and plastic bags, stuff like that. But and of course, we're making that transition, or trying to at least make that transition back to the land to get back in touch with the ways of nature and have some good food, too.
Right.
I always ask, who pays the way? So this is a subscription publication, right?
Yes, you can get a subscription. We offer 3-year subscriptions. You can find the Old Farmer's Almanac wherever books and newspapers are sold, and mm-hmm. magazine stands, hardware stores, grocery stores, you know, the various chains, all the major brands that folks know, are on our website, almanac.com.
Good, and you take advertising, so you make your money there as well.
Of course.
Right, okay, good. Well, what about government money? Do you get any government money or corporate sponsorships?
Well, occasionally, you know, there are corporate sponsorships mm-hmm. for various products. We do calendars and certainly page opportunities inside or
sure,
or
that's advertising, right?
Yeah,
right. But,
yeah.
But you don't have anybody encouraging you to be editorial one way or another other than your advertisers and your subscribers.
Yes, and indeed, it is really our subscribers and our own instincts, and you know, the core elements of the Old Farmer's Almanac, and I think that's something that some people aren't necessarily familiar with. We are the Old Farmer's Almanac. There are lots of farmers' almanacs out there. There always have been.
Mm-hmm.
We are the oldest of the bunch, the oldest continuously published periodical in North America. But an almanac, whether it's ours or anybody else's, and if indeed it's a true farmer's almanac, is not just the farming information, but it's all of the other elements. And in particular, it's the calendar aspect, because an almanac is a calendar of the heavens, and it's an accounting of length of day, sunrise and sunset, because farmers then and now need to know that kind of thing, as do fishermen and hunters mm-hmm. and other people that, you know, work outside.
Who have it in interaction with the environment, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The moon phases, the various other planetary sightings and other celestial events. The almanac is a reference book. And, of course, it's a time capsule of the year. And, you know, when we talk about the 216th year, we have up in the Dublin offices in New Hampshire a full set of every issue, and I've got to tell you, it's as fun and fascinating to read the almanac, whether it's 5 or 50 or 150 years old, and we certainly hope that we continue in that tradition as we move forward.
You know, with respect to that, you are the oldest publication in North America, right?
Right.
Anything else?
Oldest continuously published periodical.
Anything else close?
There are some classics that come to mind, mm-hmm. perhaps Saturday Evening Post, and of course there was Life magazine. There are some newspapers that I'm sure have been around mm-hmm. for a while, but I think as a periodical, and in particular an annual, we're the oldest,
right.
You know, continuously published. I mean, there were a couple of things that...
Well, let me ask you this. So what is it that allows you to survive for 216 years, okay?
Good question. And that sort of defines the almanac, too, because if you think the almanac...
I mean, there's got to be a secret in there that allows you to survive for 216 years. You can't just have recipes. You can't just have this. You can't, you know, fun stories. There has to be a secret.
It's a little bit of luck. It's a little bit, a lot of accuracy. Uh-huh. It's a little bit of silliness. And, you know, of course, our weather formulas
It's the weather, isn't it?
Secret weather formulas, right?
It's a secret weather. You have a secret weather formula. And today we're going to try to pry it out of you. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Janice Stillman, who is the 13th editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, a publication that's been on the market for 216 years. And the secret, I believe, to this longevity is that they know how to forecast the weather a year in advance. And that secret has been 80% accurate over the course of those 216 years. And if you're a gambling person, like all farmers are gambling people, you can make a living on that kind of odds, right? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, we're back, and this is The Food Chain. I'm Michael Olson, your host for the hour. Today we're talking weather with the people who know how to predict the weather over the course of 216 years. And that, of course, would be the Old Farmer's Almanac. We're talking with the editor of the Farmer's Almanac, Janice Stillman, the 13th editor in this long-lived publication. And today we're looking at weather with these folks because to survive for 216 am I here?
Yes.
Can you can hear me, Janice, right?
Yes. I'm with you.
Okay, good.
Yes.
We had a little technical difficulty. Oh. So folks, to survive for 216 years in business, you have to have some kind of secret that provides a good service to the community. And otherwise, there are so many competitors, it's almost impossible to survive. So, what are we going to provide? We're going to provide weather. Tell us a little bit about Robert Thomas and his secret formula.
Well, Robert B. Thomas grew up in Western Massachusetts in a town called Grafton. His father was a teacher, and a lot of folks were teachers at that time. He lived on a farm, but because his dad was a teacher, too, he also had a library. Now, in that case, it really consisted of a few books, not a huge collection, but certainly enough to pique Robert's interest. And one of his favorite books was one that was based on astronomy. And so, of course, Robert B. Thomas, having grown up on a farm, knew farming ways, was familiar with some of the literature that was available at the time, and these were almanacs and various other brochures. Remember, we didn't have the kind of magazine selection and media that we have today, 216 years ago, back in those days. When
no internet, right?
Right. George Washington was president. Everybody lived on a farm, grew their own food, or traded animals and various other supplies to get what they needed. So what I'm getting to is that Robert B. Thomas knew about life on the farm, and he knew about the kinds of aids and publications that were available. And he determined, as he was growing up, that he was going to create his own farmer's almanac, and it was going to be better than all the others. So he became a teacher for a few years as he continued to study the settings that would be necessary, and these would be the astrological data, the rise and set of the sun and the moon's place and various other things, and collecting some historical data to put on his calendar pages. And in 1792, he prepared the book. He was studying with a fellow in Boston, and he published it. He produced 3,000 copies of the first Old Farmer's Almanac. It was...
Was it always the Old Farmer's Almanac, even when it was the New Farmer's Almanac?
Very good question. No, it was not. At that time, it was called the Farmer's Almanac, and it was indeed until, for the most part, just after his death in 1848. But his first issue came out with 3,000 copies. It sold for the equivalent of about 6 cents, and it was a bestseller. It was a runaway bestseller. But of course, you have to remember that it was only available in the New England area. It was a regional publication for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
His second issue came out the following year with 9,000 copies, and that was a runaway bestseller. And he just decided, you know, I think I've got something. And he continued on. But I think the difference between his Farmer's Almanac and the others who were out there was certainly a little bit of luck and timing. But also, he introduced a humor factor. He provided practical, useful information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he made it accessible, easy to read, and in a handy package. And you know, we try to continue.
Yeah, but that's
certainly
something all publications can do.
He had his weather forecast. And, you know, presumably, we really don't have any evidence of earlier Farmer's Almanacs from that time, but he did include weather forecasts because, of course, that's what farmers needed to know.
And that's what they need to know most, right?
Yeah.
And they need to know what the weather's going to be like. Today, of course, you can look on satellite. You have all of these weather services, but there was something about his weather that allowed his magazine to survive where others did not.
Correct. Now, of course, he didn't have the same kind of the regional distribution and coverage of weather that we have today,
mm-hmm.
16 regions across the country. And he didn't have the detail that we have today. He actually introduced his weather forecast in the calendar pages, and we continue that tradition and also present a doggerel or rhyming weather forecast in our weather pages. But he recognized that he had to use scientific disciplines. He studied the sunspots. And he looked to see the cycles of the sunspots, and he looked to see what effect that those had in their various phases on weather conditions before, you know, in years preceding.
So somebody had collected that information
then? It had been studied since Galileo in 1610.
Oh.
Now, of course, he didn't have satellite data. He didn't have the kinds of telescopic information. He didn't have the same vast, you know, volumes of information that we have today, nor the methods for collecting it. But there was then a minority, a small, you know, school of folks, if you will, around the globe who did believe that there was an influence of from the sun on our atmosphere and thus on our weather. And, you know, Robert B. Thomas also used moon phases and lunar information in his forecast, and we no longer do that. But his forecast, and I can read you a couple here from the 1793 issue. For example, in January, he forecasted, looks like snow, blustering weather, cold but pleasant, cold and clear, windy weather, clear and cold. Then in February, now look for rain but clears away moderately, cold north, east wind, fair weather, clouds denote a storm. So it's kind of brief. It's spread out across the month. I mean, I've, you know, mm-hmm. various days and over long periods, you know, weeks and days through the month. But it's the beginning. And
listen, here's a regional forecast from the 1998 or 2008 Old Farmer's Almanac. April, and this is for the southeast, April and May will be a bit warmer and drier than normal. Summer will be slightly hotter than normal with below normal rainfall in eastern North Carolina and above normal rainfall elsewhere. The hottest temperatures will occur in early June, early to mid-July, and early August. So the difference, there's not much difference. I mean, you guys are still doing the same thing 216 years later. And people are still buying it, and people are still relying on it.
Yes.
So I think all of this gets back to this 80% accuracy rate. Holy smokes. I mean, if you could take that to Las Vegas.
We are traditionally 80% accurate in our weather forecast. And I think it's important to note that we do forecast for 16 regions across the country.
Mm-hmm.
We forecast temperature and precipitation as they are expected to deviate from the norm, or the average temperature and precipitation. And there are occasions where we will be 80% accurate in temperature across the country. We might be 80% accurate in one region for one season. So when you add it all up, you know, that's where 80% comes. Sometimes we might miss in precipitation in a region, and regions encompass all or parts of several states.
Uh-huh.
You see. So it's a mathematical calculation that ultimately results in a traditional accuracy rate of 80%.
80%. Okay, right. But with an 80% accuracy rating, or with an 80% positive, you can go to Las Vegas and make a gazillion dollars, right? And so that has to be the key to the 216-year longevity of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Now, I understand that you still have the same secret formula locked away in a tin box in your corporate headquarters. Is that true?
It's true, but you're not going to ask me to reveal it, are you?
Well, I certainly am, and we're going to go right there when we come back from this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Janice Stillman, who is the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, a 216-year-old publication, telling us what the weather will be next year. And there are so many things we'd like to know about the weather next year. For example, is the globe really warming? Will it rain enough? What's going to happen with our crops if it doesn't rain? And the Old Farmer's Almanac has these pieces of information on the cover this year. Hurricanes, blizzards, and droughts. Get ready. Give us a ring. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Right back. Locked away, way up there in New Hampshire, in a corporate headquarters of the Old Farmer's Almanac, in a black tin box, is a secret formula for predicting weather that over the years has proved to be 80% accurate. Now, folks, if you have that kind of ability to look into the future and see the weather, you can earn a living. And that's what farmers rely on to earn a living, is good weather. So having that information is so critical to them, which is what I believe explains the longevity of the 216-year-old Old Farmer's Almanac. So today we're going to see if we can sneak a peek into that black box and see what the secret formula is with Janice Stillman, who is the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. Janet, you got to tell us how you guys do this.
Well, I can tell you how we do the weather, but I can't give you the entire calculation.
It a mathematical formula?
Yes, indeed there is.
Oh, it is?
Yes. Yes, it's a very detailed mathematical formula. Even I have not been made privy to that.
Oh, you mean they're not even going to tell you?
Right.
And you're the editor? Well,
right.
Who's they?
Well, they in particular, our meteorologist for one,
uh-huh.
And whoever holds the key.
Uh-huh.
This black box resides in our offices in Dublin, and I want to point out that your listeners can actually look at our offices, and we've got a webcam pointed to the door.
Do you have a webcam on the black box?
Not yet, but you can go to our website, almanac.com, and you can actually see our offices. It's a delightful red barn building in Dublin, New Hampshire, and you can see the traditional New England church steeple behind and
uh-huh.
the town hall across the street. But back to the weather forecast. We use three scientific disciplines. We use solar science, and again, this harks back to Robert B. Thomas's methodology as well, but with all state-of-the-art technology and data. And solar science involves the study of the activity on the sun, and in particular the sunspots, which are magnetic storms on the surface of the sun that throw out waves of heat and energy as they explode. We also use climate...
Gee, you mean the sun actually has an impact on Earth's climate and weather? That's a surprise, isn't it?
I think so. We also use climatology, and as the term implies, it's the study of weather and prevailing conditions over long periods of time. And our meteorologist, Michael Steinberg, takes the records he has for sunspots and solar cycles, and he looks at the history of the weather over a period of time and sees how they correspond and anticipates or predicts what will happen next. And he uses meteorology, which is the study of the atmosphere, to actually further explain and write his forecast. So it's a three-discipline procedure mm-hmm. of solar science, climatology, and meteorology.
And it's still based on the work of Robert B. Thomas.
Well, with the
216 years ago, right?
The same core principles, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our meteorologist's actual calculation and prognostication that he goes through that actually produces our long-range weather forecast. And these span a period from October of 1 year to November of the, November to October. So the forecast begin in November of the cover year and run until October of the next year. And they are delivered to the offices in Dublin, New Hampshire in February and March. So in effect, we have the longest long-range weather forecast in the country.
You're in effect looking out a year and a half at least, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
With an 80% accuracy rate. I don't think any television weather person has an 80% accuracy. They might, but I don't know. So that's truly an incredible, that's a valuable formula then, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed, yes.
It's kind of like Coca-Cola's secret formula. If Pepsi-Cola gets it, you're out of business, or you have a real competitor then. Does anybody else look this far into the future?
Not that we're aware of, no. We indeed are the only full farmer's almanac with this kind of process and this kind of success rate and this kind of procedure.
Mm-hmm. Well, the cover of the Old Farmer's Almanac 2008 version says, hurricanes, blizzards, and drought, get ready.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the articles in the Old Farmer's Almanac is about the curious events in weather that have happened in years ending in eight. And we called it, in fact, crazy eights.
Oh, the crazy eights? Oh.
Yes. And we found, you know, we always try to introduce some weather information. Sometimes it's more scientific, sometimes it's historical. But, you know, a weather story with every issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, we were sitting around, you know, at a story meeting and just chatting about events and realized that, of course, the warmest year of the year, warmest year to date in recorded history was 1998. And we started to think that one of the worst blizzards in New England, Northeast weather history, was in 1978. And somebody mentioned that in 1888, there was a children's blizzard, what came to come to be known as the children's blizzard in the Midwest. And that is so named because the weather changed so dramatically and so quickly that kids were on their way home from school and several of them perished in this blizzard. So then we just took a deeper, longer look into records and realized that a lot of weird weather, crazy things have happened in years ending in eight. And we recap a number of those and then took a look at the conditions that we're expecting to be in place for 2008, mm-hmm. which is La Nina on the west coast and warm Atlantic water on the east coast. And, you know, kind of just sort of run it up the flagpole to let folks know that, you know, this indeed might be another year of extreme conditions, and that could be snow, that could be drought, that could be heavy rains. I mean, so certainly within our forecast for 2008, we identify some of these conditions, but there is a sort of a precedence, and we're just suggesting that this indeed may be yet
another crazy eight year. Well, you have all kinds of weather forecasts, actually. You have one for the year 2007 and 8, general weather forecasts and reports. So you go through, like, November through March. What is it going to be, generally speaking? How does that work? So this is an overall look at the climate.
Exactly. Yeah. This is kind of a broad statement, and it speaks to the country coast to coast. And it corresponds, in fact, to the color weather maps that folks will find in the Old Farmer's Almanac in this year on page 80. and that's included so that you can see at a glance really what conditions will be through the winter and then through the spring, through the summer, in general.
So for example, winter 2007 and 8 on your map, you have a green on the west coast where it says mild and wet.
Right.
And then a big chunk of the heartland from, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, all the way through, it says mild and dry.
And notice there's not a lot of snowfall
there. Not a lot of snowfall. Bad news. Gosh, folks, we're up against a break. But when we get back, we're going to talk about what our weather is going to be like next year with the people who are 80% accurate at figuring it out and predicting it. That, of course, would be the people at the Old Farmer's Almanac. And we have Janice Stillman with us, who is the editor of that publication, and she is sitting on the secret formula to figuring out the future, but she doesn't have the key, so she can't tell us what's in it. But maybe we'll get some more information out of her when we get back from this break. Pick up your phone and join us today. Anything to do with weather, farmers, or history and culture, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, and we will be right back.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box. A heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Well, you know that little yellow pamphlet or magazine that's been laying around your house for the last 216 years? Pick it up and open it up sometime and look into it. This is a great adventures in there, the Old Farmer's Almanac. And right now we're looking at the weather map for next year. And what we see this coming winter is a little bit of mild and wet weather on the West Coast and dry everywhere else. Is it really going to be that dry?
We're actually forecasting that 2008 will be the warmest year of the century.
Ah.
In fact, the past century, to be sure. It's not just the year 2000, the century 2000. We're basing that on our study of solar activity, as I mentioned before, and the La Nina that is currently present and is expected to prevail throughout the winter. We are forecasting that there will be snowfall where snow usually falls, but the difference will be that this year we are expecting there will be no prolonged periods of cold. So those folks who like snow should get out and play in it as soon as it drops, because we expect that it won't last very long at all. Maybe a matter of a few days before the conditions turn mild again. And mild is relative in this case to your particular area.
Mm-hmm.
So mild
in Montana is different than mild in Florida, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Good. And we always have to bear that in mind. We had a caller during the break who wanted to know about earthquakes and earthquake weather. We're situated out here on the West Coast, and periodically we have an earth that shakes beneath our feet. And those of us who've been out here for quite a while have come to believe in something called earthquake weather. Have you ever picked up on anything remotely relating to earthquake weather?
No, I'm not familiar with earthquake weather, but we have historically and traditionally, you know, indicated in the Old Farmer's Almanac that the dates on which the moon rides high or low, the period of 5 days around those, may be the most likely periods for an earthquake in the northern hemisphere and similarly in the southern hemisphere. But weather,
when you say rides high or low, what does that mean?
Where it appears in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to the horizon.
Oh, okay, good. So it's where it appears, and that has a... So for people who we city people who live in air-conditioned cocoons, who don't have much relationship with weather and the elements of nature. What impact does the moon have on weather?
The moon, we're not of the mind that the moon has an impact on weather per se, but there are certain indications of what the weather might be if you were to look out at the moon at, you know, at a given time.
So the moon has gravitational forces that might have an impact on earthquakes and tides and floods and things like that, but not really necessarily on weather itself. But by looking at the moon, you can have an indication about weather.
Yes. This gets to the proverbs, the weather proverbs, which are natural indications of what conditions might be in the immediate future or maybe in the months and ahead. But with the moon, for example, if the full moon rises pale, expect rain. If the full moon rises red, expect wind. And, of course, the first is an indication that there is a haze or a cloud cover advancing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second, you know, is again a change in the weather. Similarly, when the moon runs low, expect warm weather. A lunar halo indicates rain, and the number of stars enclosed the number of days of rain. There's a huge compendium of weather proverbs. Indeed, we have books and books of them available to us at the Old Farmer's Almanac because they are still true and still fun and fascinating. And they're the way that folks years ago, before we had so much media and immediate access to information, used to get a hint of what the weather was going to be, what was forthcoming. And it was, very, very much a part of people's lives to learn and know and understand to be able to interpret weather proverbs, be they about the moon or the clouds or plants or insects and birds and animals and, you know, the rain and the dew itself, specific weather conditions. We try to bring those back into the Old Farmer's Almanac all the time, whether it be on the calendar pages or occasionally in articles as they seem appropriate, because folks love that, and it is fun. You know, with the cows lie down when there's rain coming, or leaves turn up in trees, or is it the acorns that the squirrels are gathering, or the layers of onions in that harvest?
They almost say as much about us as they do about the weather, don't they?
Yes. And they are fun and fascinating, and it's a good fun to see if indeed it plays out. And most of the time it does, because nature has her ways. You know,
so nothing about earthquake weather?
I have to admit, I'm not familiar with earthquake weather.
Well, there's a new article for your next Farmer's Almanac magazine, because those of us who live in earthquake country kind of see the still, dead air. It's hard to describe, but there seems to be a period of still, dead, almost anticipatory air.
Mm-hmm.
That comes before an earthquake, and you never really recognize it until after the earthquake. That's when you know that there was earthquake weather.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Janice Stillman. And when we come back, we're going to conclude with the big question of the day, which, of course, is the globe warming. And we have some folks who might be able to tell us, because they have a secret formula locked away in a black tin box up there in New Hampshire. And that secret formula, over the past 216 years, has been 80%. Correct. And boy, with those odds, you ought to have a pretty good chance in gambling on the future. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. You're invited to participate today by picking up your phones and calling 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We do have a few minutes left for phone calls, not much, but love to hear what you have to say. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, when it comes to predicting weather, the Old Farmer's Almanac is almost always 80% right. And the reason it's almost always 80% right is 216 years ago, Robert B. Thomas put together a secret formula for predicting weather. And over the course of those years, that formula has proved to be over around 80%, correct? And so today, you know, we're talking with the folks at the Farmer's Almanac, the old Farmer's Almanac, Janice Stillman, who's the editor there. And I'd like to ask her, well, is the globe warming, Janice?
Well, certainly parts of it are.
Mm-hmm.
And
parts of it are.
We focus on North America in terms of our forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I can speak with some limited authority. We are forecasting that this coming year, 2008, winter through fall, will be the warmest year in the past 100 years and perhaps the warmest year in recorded history. The reason I say, again, that parts of the globe appear to be warming is that, you know, we don't study on a practical basis other sides of the world and like that.
Right. So the only thing you can really speak to is what you look at then.
Primarily North America, right. Mm-hmm. We forecast for the United States and Canada.
So that's a significant thing. If you're a farmer, you're looking at the warmest year ever.
Right.
And a dry year, too, correct?
Exactly. I was just going to say, in many cases, it will be the driest year ever. In some cases, we will see more water than people need, more precipitation, that is to say, more moisture than folks need. And, you know, all of this really is a function of ocean oscillations. These are weather patterns that cover massive parts of the globe. There are loads of them around the world. They influence the climate. They influence each other, which then, you know, affects the climate. La Nina is one of those. The Atlantic Oscillation, AMO, is one of those. The Pacific Decadal Oscillation is it. There are a number of these weather patterns, mm-hmm. really, is what they are, that set up over the oceans and influence landforms. And it's based on that, in particular La Nina, in the case of U.S. and Canada, that in the solar cycles, and that's what causes us to conclude that 2008 will be the warmest year of the past century, and that winter, in particular, will be the mildest for the country as a whole.
Okay, given that 2008 is going to be the warmest for a long, long time, perhaps forever, does that mean the globe is warming?
Well, you know, again, certainly, you know, I'm not going to argue with the statistics that folks have put up and to say mm-hmm. that there are parts of the globe that are showing, you know, warmer than ever conditions. We see meltdown in the Arctic, the North Polar regions. But again, I just cannot, you know, speak with more than anecdotal evidence of other conditions. We've read about the warm seasons in Europe, drying conditions through Southern Europe. You know, otherwise
okay,
abnormal.
Well, that's fair enough. But as an editor of a magazine that focuses on farmers or people who would like to be farmers, what do you see the future for farmers, for your core demographic, for small farmers?
Small farmers and gardeners, it's interesting that we are seeing long-term cooler than normal temperatures in general in the next 10 to 15 years after this year coming.
Wow. So hot, then cooling off.
That's what our forecast is, really long range.
Okay, Janice Stillman from the Old Farmer's Almanac, thank you so much for joining us. And folks, thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for more What's Eating What Radio next week right here on The Food Chain.
Remember, no matter what the weather is, the only perfect climate is in bed.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.